You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Michael Haney was just 6 years old on April 24, 1970, when his father, Bob Haney, died suddenly. The circumstances of his father's death were murky at best, even for those closest to him, and Michael grew up not knowing the truth. Decades later, when Michael was a seasoned journalist, he finally set out to investigate his father's death and the life that had preceded it. It's the subject of his memoir, After Visiting Friends, which has just been issued in a paperback edition by Scribner. Michael Haney is the deputy editor of GQ. I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
Is this a story about journalism? Your father, your uncle, you all have been journalists?
We've all been journalists, yes. It's a story about journalists, but as I like to think about it, you know, we all have the ability to report our lives and sort of be aware of the stories within our own families.
But isn't that rare that so many different people in the same family go into that business? It's different than if it's show business.
I think it's more common. I mean, look at New York City. I mean, it's like everything is, you know, Lopate and Sons, Haney, you know, like it's the family business. It's you know, firemen and police officers. It sort of runs in our blood to go in the family business.
You were only six. Mm-hmm. You can't have much of a memory of your father.
No, you know, it's funny. I think if we all, everyone listening to this show, you think about yourselves, you have what I call those sort of like, firework moments where you remember someone. And I think, you know, if you've lost a parent at an early age, you sort of always have those moments seared into your mind.
What were you told about his death at the time?
We were told, my father worked what was called the lobster shift at which is 6 p.m. to 2 a.m., put out the early edition. And we were told that he was 35 at the time, and he had died of a heart attack and been found on the street by some police officers. But that story, you know, again, you talk about yourself when you're a kid, it never rang true to me.
And then 12 years later, it took you 12 years to mm-hmm. read his obituaries. Had you been discouraged from reading them?
I hadn't been discouraged. I just had never really sort of, you know, had the sort of put the dots together to do it.
And then when you read them, were you surprised by the fact that they were inconsistent?
Very surprised, yeah. But it's like all of us, we have these little mysteries in our families.
They reported different causes of death.
Yes, it was sort of, you know, it just said he had died after visiting friends, and it gave an address of a neighborhood in Chicago, and I thought two things. One, we don't know anyone near there, and how come I've never heard from any of these friends? Mm-hmm. And then it took me a good 2-3 decades to work up the courage to go in search of that truth.
So the visiting friends is what you wound up using for your title here,
right?
Because that's at the heart of the story, and I'm not sure that we want to reveal it, although it has been revealed right. In reviews of the hardcover edition.
Sure. I mean, I'm happy to talk about it. I think, you know, we all know the Titanic sank. We still went to see the movie, so.
Because this is a very nicely written book, so people can read it just for the pleasure of your prose.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, it's a story about, I think, it's a very personal story, like I say, about family and family secrets, but it's also very universal because I think we all have these questions in our own families that we long to go in search of, and mine happened to be, what happened to my father the night he died, and I needed to know that story.
And you found out he was visiting with a friend.
A friend. He had was seeing another woman, and he died in her bed.
And why was that? Was that covered up?
It was covered up by his brother, who was a big editor at the Chicago newspapers, another editor in town. And I think it really was, you know, at the heart, you know, my uncle, who was trying to do what he thought was right, was protect my mother and my brother and me from something that would be painful.
Well, your uncle Dick Haney was a well-known journalist, also a teacher mm-hmm. of journalism. To some degree, doing this sort of thing goes against all of the laws of his profession.
Exactly. I was just actually back at Northwestern University in Chicago, where he was the dean later in his life, and I still meet people out in the world who knew him and his journalistic ethics. And I think it was that moment when that collided with, you know, I need to sort of do something to preserve my family.
Well, he delivered the news of your father's death. Why Wasn't it the police?
Well, that was what always sort of started the rub in my own shoe, which is just like, wait, if he was found on the street and the cops found him, I've seen enough shows when I'm a teenage kid to know the cops would knock on the door. And that was sort of the beginning of wondering, this just is not adding up to me.
Well, you write about a close relationship between reporters and cops at the time.
Right. It was a very different world. And I think this is one reason the book also resonates with people. It's a bit of, you know, we all want to be transported to a time we can't go to. And this was this era. My father died in 1970. And as one of the reporters who worked with my father said, you have to remember, we worked with guys who covered the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. And it was a time when cops and reporters were still on the same side of the street. And, you know, only 2 or 3 years later, you get Watergate and everything changes. And that adversarial relationship begins. And adversarial in a good way, where all of a sudden reporters are not taking the press release that's handed to them by the police department. They're questioning things. And it was, so it's a different time when, and, you know, where my uncle was able to say to some police officer, listen, let me take care of this. Let me go break the news. You could never do that now.
Did you approach this book as a son or as a journalist?
I think both. You know, I approached it with the skills of a journalist, but I approached it with a son wanting to know about his father.
But sometimes there can be a conflict between those two roles.
It can, but, you know, I worked very hard in this book to look at, you know, there were people I interviewed in this book who didn't want to tell me the truth. After all these years, journalists. And, you know, I looked at them and I understand why they would not want to tell me the truth. They were making a decision. I think the book has a lot of moments where people have to do their own moral calculus. You have to decide, you know, if you were sitting there and today, 40 years later, someone knocked on your door and said, Mr. Lopez, I think you knew my father. Can you tell me what happened to him? And you decide in that moment, do I want to be the truth teller? Because we all know what happens to the truth teller. So I think there's a lot of those moments in the book where readers identify themselves in there.
And you're right. It's one thing to be the truth seeker. It's quite another to be the truth bearer, mm-hmm. the delusion destroyer. There's a reason people don't like revisionist historians.
Right. Yeah, it's you know, that's a moment when we all know that people say, listen, tell me the truth. Tell me. And it's again, a point where the book really connects with people.
Well, once you knew the truth about your father's death, did you feel that there was somebody you had to share it with right away?
Well, my mother, of course, you know, who...
Your brother?
My brother.
All were slightly estranged over the years. After he died, you say you kind of split apart like three atoms.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, you have to remember it was such a different time, 1970, I think, for those of us listening who, you know, nowadays grief counselors are there right away and there's support groups. And I went to school that day. I was in kindergarten. I walked to school. And as my mother said, you know, it breaks my heart. She said, I didn't know any better. And of course she didn't, but the system wasn't there.
Well, did your mother ever look into how your father died? Was it a surprise to her when you told her what had happened?
Yes, a total surprise. But I'll tell you an interesting story. When I gave her the book to read before it was published, you know, I went back to Chicago. I gave her the book. I left. 2 days later, she called me and she said, she was crying. And I said, why are you crying? And she said, it's the most beautiful gift you could have ever given me. And I said, but why are you crying? She said, it just brought up things that I had suppressed for years. And you have given me the ability to look at that part of my life now.
Well, she didn't even know that there had been an autopsy of your father.
No.
Was that all just kept from her? Or do you think it was that she didn't want to know? I mean, how much of this is, I don't want to know because maybe I even suspect?
I think some of it also was the shock in the moment. You know, one of the themes in the book that I try to explore is memory. And what do we remember and questioning what do we really remember? And, you know, my mother has said since then, like one day she called me and said, you know, I just remembered something. So I was like, I really remember one day having his shirt and putting it into the washing machine. And there was the lipstick on the collar. And she said, I hadn't really thought of that for 40 years. And I said, what did you do? She said, I put it in the washing machine and told myself not to think about it, but it bubbled up again.
My guest is Michael Haney, whose memoir, After Visiting Friends, A Son's Story, is now available in paperback from Scribner's. Your mother, you describe your mother as courageous, unsentimental, determined. But why do you think that she loved the story of Michael Corleone and The Godfather so much?
Yeah, the story I referred to in the book is when I was growing up, my mother, this was in 1974, 75, right after the movie came out, and I was about 8, 9 years old. And I once asked her where she was going, and she said, "Do you know the final scene in The Godfather?" And she recounted the scene where Kay, Michael's wife, says to her, like, did you kill him, my husband, your brother? And he says, "Don't ever ask me about my business." And my mother was just always a very private person, and she would invoke that story time and again. And I can say it now, I laugh about it, but it was a house of such silence after my father died.
Were you able to find records that help you uncover the truth? Could you get the police reports, the autopsy results?
Well, what's fascinating about the book, and again, I think this inspires folks who wonder about, you know, I always say it's never too late to go in search of your own story. This was 40 years later, and I had every reason to tell myself I was never going to find the answer. And yet the book turns on two women, the kindness of two women, one who works in the morgue in Chicago, and another who works in the records department of the hospital where my father was brought. And 2 years after I go to the records department, I needed the admitting form, and this woman says, "It's 1970, like, that record is gone." 2 years later, she calls me up. I mean, I'd been at a standstill on working on this book, and she calls me up, and she says, "Do you remember me? It's Lynn from the hospital." I said, "Yeah." She said, "You know, I just couldn't stop thinking about you, and I really wanted to help you. And I find the record." I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "I pulled out the drawer, and it was at the bottom of it had fallen out." And she said, "I found it." And I think, you know, I say that to inspire folks and think, you never know who is out there who is going to be able to help you unless you sort of take that journey.
You also spoke to your grandmother about your father, mm-hmm. your cousin Mark.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you spoke to your brother.
Right.
Did you get a consistent view of him?
No, everything was different. And I think that's part of, you know, all of us, you know, if we were going to report your life, I mean, it's what we do.
Well, I'm total Rashomon.
It's that, and that's the thing. Everyone has a piece of it, you know. And here I was looking at my father through the eyes of a six-year-old boy. And someone once asked me, like, "Well, what do you think of him now?" I said, "I started this book looking at him through the eyes of a six-year-old boy. And I come out of it the other end looking at him man to man."
You couldn't talk to your father's brother, Dick Haney, because mm-hmm. he died in the 90s.
Right.
So had he written anything?
No. And my cousin Mark, his brother, his son, told me, he said, "I think my father lived in fear of you." He said, being able to figure out, he said, every time you called, he was afraid it was you were going to be the one who's going to, like, "Now I want to ask you about this." So it was, you know, it was that secret that he carried around that was so burdensome for him.
Especially as somebody who was a seeker of the truth.
Yes,
as
exactly.
A journalist.
Exactly.
Michael Haney is the deputy editor of GQ these days. And he's written a memoir that was a New York Times bestseller when it was issued in hardcover, now available in paperback from Scribner, called After Visiting Friends, A Son's Story. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Really happy to be here. Thank you very much.